So imagine waking up, you grab your morning coffee, and you just glance at your phone.
Right, the usual routine.
Yeah. But instead of a pager going off, you see a notification that your company's system didn't just flag a critical server outage at like 3.0 a.m.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Instead, an AI agent diagnosed the memory leak, wrote a patch for it, tested it in the sandbox, and then just routed it to your lead engineer for a one-click approval.
Which is wild because you aren't prompting it to do any of this. It's just happening in the background.
Exactly. And, you know, as a technology professional tuning into this deep dive, you already have your baseline, right? You know how LLMs work. You're highly comfortable with advanced prompting.
Yeah, you've probably built a Harig pipeline or two for your org by now.
Right. Retrieval augmented generation. So you are, for all intents and purposes, caught up.
But, and this is a big, but being caught up is very different from being ahead.
So true.
And right now, the AI landscape is totally fracturing into two distinct realities. You have your catch-up list, which is the baseline we just talked about, and then you have the get-ahead list.
And the engineers and architects focusing on that get-ahead list, they're building systems that, honestly, they don't even resemble the chatbots we were playing with like 2 years ago.
Not even close.
So today's deep dive is exclusively about that get-ahead list for 2025 and 2026. We are unpacking nine emerging concepts from recent industry intelligence spanning hardware, architecture, governance.
All heavy hitters.
Yeah. And these are the things that will give you and your organization a massive, meaningful competitive edge over the next 5 years.
And we should mention, we're skipping the hype
Oh,
today.
totally. No sci-fi promises,
Yeah.
no philosophical debates about consciousness.
Right.
We are focusing entirely on practical organizational realities.
Which is exactly where we need to be, because the underlying paradigm of how we even interact with AI is it's fundamentally changing right now.
Right. It's shifting from the application layer all the way down to the physical silicon.
Yeah, so to really understand where we're going, we kind of have to start at the user experience, which is rapidly moving toward what the industry is calling ambient AI.
Okay, let's unpack that because for the last couple of years, AI has basically been a prompt response machine.
Completely reactive,
You
yeah.
type a question, you hit enter, it gives an answer. But ambient AI is the shift to systems that are always on and proactive.
Right.
I like to think of it like an org chart. We're moving from an intern who only does exactly what you ask when you ask it,
And nothing more.
right? To an experienced chief of staff who, you know, anticipates the problem, checks the logs, and proposes a solution before you've even had that morning coffee we talked about.
That is a great analogy, but to build that chief of staff, you need a completely different architectural chassis.
Because you can't just rely on a stateless system waiting for a user prompt.
Exactly. Ambient AI relies heavily on event streaming. So instead of a prompt, the agent is continuously subscribing to data feeds.
Like server logs or, I don't know, email fire hoses.
Yeah, email, sensor data, Jira ticketing systems, all of it.
But wait, how does it remember what it's seeing without completely blowing out its context window?
Yeah.
Like you can't just feed an LLM an endless stream of Jira tickets.
No, it would totally freeze up, or it would just cost an absolute fortune in compute.
Right.
That's why persistent memory is the second big pillar here. These ambient systems heavily utilize vector databases.
Okay, so creating embeddings.
Right. As the event stream comes in, the system creates those embeddings, the mathematical representations of the data, and it stores them.
So when a specific trigger condition is met, it's not trying to read a million lines of logs at once.
Exactly. It just queries the vector database for only the most relevant context, and then it executes a proactive task.
And the organizational impact of this is already pretty measurable. Like early adopters in enterprise IT are reporting a 40% reduction in manual operational workloads.
Wow, 40%.
Yeah, just from having ambient agents monitor system metrics and propose fixes before an engineer even logs on.
And we're seeing this hit the consumer and edge device level too. Like at CES 2026, Lenovo introduced Kira.
Oh yeah, Kira.
Yeah, and they're explicitly positioning it as an OS-level personal ambient intelligence.
But I mean, as an engineer, the second you hear always on an OS level, your immediate thought goes straight to privacy constraints.
Oh, absolutely. The requirement there is massive because always on literally means always listening or monitoring.
Right.
So the only way ambient AI survives in an enterprise deployment or even a consumer market is through really strict on-device processing.
Because you cannot just constantly stream a company's internal Slack network to a cloud provider's API.
Exactly. The inference has to be processed locally on the edge hardware. It's privacy by design.
Okay, so building this ambient chief of staff isn't something you can just hack together with standard Python scripts and basic API calls.
No, definitely not.
The infrastructure fundamentally changes, which is why we're seeing this massive shift toward specialized agentic frameworks. So how are developers actually building these proactive systems right now?
Well, they're relying on a whole new generation of orchestration infrastructure. You've got things like LangGraph, which is phenomenal for building stateful graph-based workflows.
And stateful is the key word there, right?
Right. The system actually remembers where it is in a multi-step process.
So it allows for complex cyclic routing, like an agent trying a piece of code, failing, looping back to rewrite it and trying again.
Exactly. You also have OpenAI's Agents SDK for production-ready deployments, which has built-in observability, and Amazon Strands.
But you know, what fascinates me isn't even just the individual frameworks. It's the standardization layer that's emerging underneath all of them.
Oh, you mean the Model Context Protocol?
Yes. MCP.
Yeah, MCP is arguably the most critical development in this space right now. I like to think of MCP like USB for AI.
Oh, that's good. Because before USB, every mouse and printer needed a custom proprietary port on the back of your PC.
It was a total nightmare.
It really was.
And until recently, AI agents faced that exact same problem. If you wanted your agent to talk to GitHub and Jira and Salesforce, a developer had to sit down and write custom API glue code for every single tool.
Sounds exhausting.
It was. But MCP creates this universal adapter layer. It's an open protocol that lets AI agents discover and interact with data sources in a completely standardized way.
And that's what prevents framework lock-in.
Exactly.
Like, if you build a tool integration using MCP, it doesn't matter if you migrate your whole architecture from LangGraph over to Amazon Strands next year. The tools just still work.
Right. It decouples the tool from the framework.
Okay, so let's unpack the next logical engineering challenge here. Because if these frameworks now allow us to build highly capable individual agents.
Yeah.
The question becomes, how do we organize multiple agents to complete, like, massive multi-step enterprise tasks?
Ah, right. The great debate. Orchestration versus agent swarms.
Yes. Let's start with orchestration.
So orchestration is essentially the hierarchical model of organizing an AI workforce. You have one top-level orchestrator. Think of it as your project manager.
Okay.
Its only job is to reason about a large user goal, break it down into a sequence of steps, and route those subtasks to specialized agents.
Well, one agent just does web research, another writes Python code, maybe a third one verifies the output.
Exactly. And the orchestrator manages the handoffs between all of them.
And enterprises really desperately need this structure. I mean, looking at the Deloitte 2025 Tech Value Survey, they found that 80% of organizations have mature basic automation like simple RPA scripts.
Right.
But only 28% have mature agentic capabilities. So
yeah.
Orchestration kind of fills that gap by putting a management layer over the AI.
Yeah. Though right now, the dominant deployment pattern for that is still suggest, then execute.
So the orchestrator acts as a human in the loop system.
Yeah, exactly. It pauses to ask a human manager for approval before taking any really high stakes actions. Because, you know, individual models still hit context limits, and they definitely still hallucinate.
Right.
So orchestration allows you to isolate those failures. If the coding agent writes a bad script, it just fails at that specific node rather than crashing the entire pipeline.
Wait, hold on, though. If we use an orchestration model, aren't we basically just engineering a massive single point of failure?
How do you mean?
Well, if that top-level project manager AI hallucinates the initial project breakdown, the whole pipeline breaks anyway, right?
Oh.
Because every subtask is based on flawed logic from the start. Isn't that exactly why the decentralized swarm model is technically superior for complex problem solving?
Well, I wouldn't say swarms are universally superior just yet, especially not for enterprise deployments.
Really? Why not?
Because orchestration is still vastly preferred in corporate environments due to the clear chain of command and the audit trail.
Oh, sure. Compliance.
Yeah. If a system breaks down, you can look at the orchestrator's logs and pinpoint exactly which agent dropped the ball. If a decentralized swarm hallucinates, it's incredibly difficult to forensically prove where the error came from.
Okay, that's a very fair point on auditability.
But for pure problem solving and emergent intelligence, you are absolutely right. The industry is looking really closely at swarms.
So contrast that with orchestration for us.
Well, swarms are a completely different decentralized model. It's inspired by biology. Think like a colony of ants or a flock of birds. There's no central project manager dictating the tasks.
The agents just coordinate laterally.
Exactly. They share information, critique each other's work, and they naturally converge on a solution without any top-down control.
And the benchmark results we're seeing from this are just stunning. Like, there was research in early 2026 where they took three relatively small open weight models.
Yeah, running on basically consumer hardware, right?
Yeah, just $7,000 worth of consumer hardware. And they used a swarm deliberation protocol.
And the results were crazy.
They hit 84% on the AME 2025 math benchmark, which is notoriously difficult. And to put that in perspective, when those exact same models operated alone with simple majority voting, they only scored 54%.
Right. So that 30-point jump on the exact same hardware is just pure emergent intelligence.
What's actually happening under the hood there?
Basically, Agent A proposes a mathematical proof. Then Agent B is prompted specifically to find logical flaws in Agent A's work.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Then Agent C takes that critique and synthesizes a revised proof. The swarm allows them to iterate until they hit consensus. And frameworks like Agency Swarm and Kaya Gomez's open source swarms repo are making this really production ready.
But okay, if we have decentralized swarms and ambient agents making proactive decisions all day, the immediate organizational risk has to be governance.
Oh, 100%.
Like, if these systems are autonomously accessing databases and executing code, how do we ensure they operate safely? You can't just type "don't break anything" in the system prompt and call it a day.
You certainly cannot. And that is the multi-million dollar question keeping CISOs awake at night.
Right. So what's the solution?
The engineering solution is policy as code. We have to completely shift how we think about compliance. You can't rely on human-readable PDFs or employee handbooks for systems operating at machine speed.
You need machine-readable deterministic rules, which brings us to OPA.
Yes, the Open Policy Agent and its programming language, RIGO.
So policy as code lets you put hard physical constraints on your agents at the infrastructure level.
Exactly.
So instead of telling an AI customer service prompt, "Hey, please try not to issue large refunds," you write a RIGO rule.
Right. So when the agent tries to hit the billing API to issue a refund over, say, $500, OPA intercepts that request in real time.
It evaluates the action against the RIGO code.
Yeah. And if there isn't cryptographic proof of human approval attached, OPA just physically drops the API call. The agent literally cannot execute it.
I love the security of that. But the source material notes this kind of running joke in the community. Everyone loves policy as code, but no one wants to write RIGO.
It's notoriously difficult and syntax heavy.
Right. So how is the industry actually solving that bottleneck? Because if governance requires writing complex RIGO for every single AI action, it's just going to stall deployment.
It is a massive friction point. But what's happening now is the emergence of translation layers.
Like UI builders.
Yeah. Tooling that allows compliance teams to write high-level policy descriptions in simplified UIs or natural language, and then that gets reliably compiled down into strict RIGO code under the hood.
Ah, so it bridges the gap between the compliance officer and the DevOps pipeline.
Exactly.
Okay, so OPA and RIGO act as the ultimate safeguard for what the AI does. But what about what the AI sees and creates? That requires C2PA, right?
Yes, the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity. Because generative AI has made it trivially easy to create highly convincing synthetic media at scale.
Right. And C2PA is the industry standard for establishing a verifiable chain of custody for digital files.
We're talking about content credentials. It's basically a cryptographically signed, tamper-evident manifest attached to a file's metadata.
So it tells you exactly what hardware took the photo, what software edited it, and crucially, if an AI model was involved.
And the momentum for this in 2025 was massive.
Yeah, Leica integrated C2PA directly into their M11P hardware. TikTok started supporting the credentials, and OpenAI is baking it into DALL-E outputs.
That hardware integration with Leica is really the holy grail here, because securing the credential at the exact moment of capture, physically on the camera sensor, means the file is verified before it ever touches a network.
Wow. But as architects, we have to be honest about its limitations. It's definitely not a silver bullet for misinformation.
Not at all. First off, the entire system is opt-in. An AI tool only declares itself if the developer configured it to do so. Malicious actors just won't include it.
Right. And security researchers have already found ways to strip the metadata.
Exactly. But the most critical limitation, and organizations really struggle with this, is that the absence of a content credential does not inherently mean the content is fake.
Because there are decades of legitimate digital media out there that were created long before these cryptographic signatures existed.
Right. C2PA adds context. It builds a zone of trust, but it doesn't magically eliminate the zone of untrust.
Okay, let's zoom out for a second. We've talked about ambient agents, decentralized swarms, policy as code, C2PA. To run all of this governed, proactive AI at enterprise scale requires an unfathomable amount of inference compute.
It really does. The economics of the cloud are frankly breaking.
Which is why the final piece of the puzzle today is how physical hardware and model architectures are being radically redesigned.
Yeah, this is where the physics of computation finally catch up with our software ambitions.
Okay, to understand this hardware redesign, we first have to talk about the two mechanical phases of how LLMs generate text. The pre-fill stage and the decode stage. To put this in perspective for you listening, think of it like cooking a complex meal. Pre-fill is the massive prep work, chopping all the vegetables, measuring the spices, preheating the pans all simultaneously. It's parallel compute.
You're processing the entire user prompt all at once.
Exactly. But decode is the actual cooking. You have to add one ingredient at a time, sequentially, waiting to taste it before you know if you need to add the next one.
That analogy maps perfectly to the architecture. Technically, the pre-fill stage is compute-bound. The GPU takes your prompt, processes it in parallel, and builds a massive beta structure called the KV cache.
The key value cache.
Right, which represents the context of the prompt. But the decode stage is memory bound. It generates one single token at a time. And for every new token, it has to reach all the way back into memory, grab that massive KV cache, and calculate the next word.
And traditionally, we've forced the exact same GPU hardware to do both the massive parallel prep work and the sequential memory heavy cooking.
Which is terribly inefficient. If you have a massive prefill operation hitting a server like someone uploading a 200-page PDF, it will stall out the decode operations for other users sharing that hardware.
So the emerging architecture is prefill decode disaggregation.
Yes. We are physically separating these two stages onto entirely different hardware clusters.
So compute-heavy GPUs handle the prefill, and then they ship the KV cache over the network to memory bandwidth heavy hardware for the decode.
Exactly. And the economic stakes here are existential. I mean, OpenAI reportedly loses around $5 billion annually just on inference costs.
Wow, $5 billion.
Yeah. Disaggregating prefill and decode is one of the only architectural levers they have to close that gap.
But even with disaggregation, we run into a hard physics problem with chip manufacturing, right?
Oh, definitely.
There was that landmark paper in January 2026 by Jiayu Ma and David Patterson. They pointed out that over the last decade, raw compute power has grown 80 times over, but memory bandwidth has only grown 17 times.
Yeah, that bottleneck is universally known as the memory wall. You have these incredibly fast compute cores on modern GPUs that are basically just sitting there idle, twiddling their thumbs, waiting for data to travel from the high bandwidth memory into the processor.
So the holy grail solution here is SRAM static random access memory.
Yes, because SRAM lives directly on the processor die itself. There's no physical distance for the data to travel, so it operates at the exact speed of the logic cores.
Right. Like Groq, the company NVIDIA acquired for $20 billion in late 2025. They built a pure SRAM processing unit, an LPU.
And because they eliminated the memory wall, their chips can generate an astonishing 350 to 465 tokens per second.
While standard GPUs get, what, maybe 20 to 80 tokens per second?
Exactly.
Wait, if Groq's SRAM chip is generating over 400 tokens a second, why isn't every enterprise just throwing out their standard GPUs today? What's the catch?
The catch is spatial density. SRAM takes up a ton of physical real estate on a silicon wafer, and it's wildly expensive. Groq's chip only has about 230 megabytes of SRAM.
Oh. And a model like Llama 70B needs hundreds of gigabytes of memory just for its weights.
Exactly. So to run that one single model, you can't use one chip. It takes 574 Groq chips networked together.
Which means the power and networking overhead makes it incredibly difficult to scale in a standard data center.
Right. So the future we're actually heading toward is a hybrid architecture. Extremely fast on-chip SRAM to hold the KV cache, paired with next-generation HBM4 to hold the model weights. NVIDIA's Rubin architecture is explicitly designed around this.
And this hardware bottleneck connects directly to our final subject, convolutional neural networks, or CNNs.
Ah.
For a few years, the dominant narrative was that CNNs are dead, replaced by vision transformers.
Yeah, that narrative was entirely wrong. It completely ignored the physical reality of strict compute and memory budgets on edge devices.
Right. If you're running an inspection camera on a factory floor or AI on a drone, you don't have the memory bandwidth for a massive transformer model.
No, you don't. CNNs are highly parameter efficient. They're optimized for spatial structure. They natively recognize edges and shapes without needing massive datasets and compute to learn visual concepts from scratch like transformers do.
And crucially, CNNs heavily utilize those highly efficient SRAM architectures we just talked about.
Because their memory footprint is so small, you can fit an entire CNN model directly onto the SRAM of a tiny edge chip. They dominate the edge because they fit the physical constraints.
So relying on CNNs isn't a step backward. It's the most efficient way forward for edge deployments.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground today. What does this all mean for you as a technology professional? Let's synthesize this. There are basically three major meta themes to take back to your organization.
Right. First, the entire infrastructure stack is being rebuilt for inference. From SRAM to disaggregated architectures, the bottleneck isn't making models smarter, it's deploying them economically at scale.
Second, trust is transitioning into a first-class engineering concern. Whether it's policy as code governing a swarm's API access or C2PA tracking content provenance, governance has to be built into the infrastructure itself.
And third, the fundamental nature of AI is shifting from a summoned tool to a proactive colleague. From orchestration agents to decentralized swarms to ambient AI in your OS, these systems are taking initiative.
Understanding these concepts now gives your org a massive strategic advantage over the next 5 years. You're not just buying software anymore, you're architecting an autonomous workforce.
Exactly.
Which leaves us with a final, somewhat provocative thought for you to explore on your own. We've talked about ambient AI constantly monitoring your environment.
Right.
And we've talked about the extreme efficiency of CNNs and SRAM at the device level, allowing powerful computing right on the edge. So what happens to corporate data security when highly capable decentralized agent swarms don't live in your secure, firewall-protected enterprise cloud?
Oh, wow.
But operate entirely in the background on the edge hardware of your employees' personal smartphones? How do you write policy as code for an autonomous swarm that lives in a user's pocket?
That is a very complex problem.
It is. We said at the beginning that the AI landscape is splitting between the catch-up list and the get-ahead list, the reactive intern versus the proactive chief of staff.
Yeah.
The organizations that figure out how to securely manage a swarm of ambient chiefs of staff operating autonomously at the edge, those are the ones who will truly get ahead.